Hey everybody, welcome back to the second episode of the True Voice Media podcast, the Social Echoes podcast. I'm John Steyer, I'm the host. And today I'm very excited because I have somebody in the mobile industry, and everybody knows that social media and the entire world of communications is headed towards mobile. So I think everybody's very excited about the aspects and the possibilities of that. And today we have Mr. Patrick Goodman, and he works for ReadyApp. Pat, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for joining me. So how's everything down in Louisville, Kentucky?
You know, bro, it's not bad. You know, hanging out in one of my favorite coffee shops. You can see some of the really fun, you know, artwork behind me. You know, one of the fun things about, you know, Louisville is this kind of creative kind of indie scene for art and music, and so it's just good, you know, to come and be in the space and be part of, you know, kind of what's happening. So it really it makes for a great day. I get to do this all the time, so it's a good day, man.
Well, that's great. So just knowing you a little bit, I know that we had got to kind of meet over your chat for ReadyApp called Mobile Chat. We'll talk a little bit about that later on in the podcast. But you're a very interesting and eclectic guy. You speak a couple different languages. You've played, you played arena football. Is that correct?
Yeah, I played 1 year of arena football here in Louisville. I played college football at Western Kentucky University during the Jack Harbaugh era when he was down there coaching, and then moved to Louisville to work on a master's degree, and then a new arena team started. So I played 1 year here just because I was working full time as an engineer and working on a master's degree, just got married recently, trying to play football, so it was way too much, and so something had to go. But I loved it. I mean, it was great fun. You know, I tell people arena football is a lot like playing, you know, football in a hockey rink without the ice.
That's cool, because I play, it's funny you say playing football in a hockey rink, because a lot of my friends and I, we play really hardcore wiffle ball, and where we play is in just a converted hockey rink. It's not converted for us. We just have made it into our own Fenway Park. So it's a lot of fun playing like that. And I actually played line in high school just for 1 year, and then I played hockey again. But I thought that was very interesting that you had played arena football. So how did you get into the mobile space?
Yeah, it's a fun story, and I'll try and keep it pretty brief. But, you know, background, I have a degree in civil engineering and then a master's degree actually here in Louisville, Kentucky, and in theology and philosophy. So those are fun things to mix together. And then lived internationally. I lived in Eastern Europe and in Russia. So, I mean, I'm a Russian speaker. I still work as a professional translator. If people want to go, you know, look on the web, you can find my LinkedIn profile. I'm not going to go so far as say that I'm fluent in Russian. You know, all of the native speakers are that way. But I still enjoy, you know, Russian language, still work and dabble in it at times. So we came back, my wife and I went over there from 2005 to 2008, and then moved back to Louisville at the end of 2008, which also kind of, you know, coincided with the economy, which decided to die about the next 18 months. So there really wasn't a massive need for a, you know, Russian speaker, even in Louisville in particular, but also, you know, was working on trying to find a way to you know, do Russian stuff with some of the energy companies in Texas. But the economy was shrinking. People were kind of retreating for a while. So I went back and got a job as an engineer. And then, you know, met a company that was doing innovative stuff in marketing. It was traditional print and direct mail marketing. Came on board there. In many ways was working, you know, most of my time there as an intrapreneur, wanting to innovate and create in the mobile space. And so that was during 2011, and was part of a team that helped, and I was the co-creator of a product called Praise, P-R-A-D-E, where we were, you know, helping restaurants, those in hospitality space, where they're used to doing loyalty paper punch cards and, you know, scanning cards. But I thought, well, that's, you know, nice and all, but everything is shifting to mobile. And so there should be a way which you can do this on mobile device. There's, you know, there's a few different companies out there doing that now, but the unique thing is that we're doing integration with the sales system as a way to actually verify a purchase. So there are some, you know, different apps out there that let you, you know, announce, hey, I'm at this spot, and you can become you know, there are various perks based on that. But what I was trying to help restaurants do is verify that you made a purchase. So you could just do a drive-by check-in. So did that for a while. You know, the company decided to move a different direction. So beginning of this year, still in Louisville, wanted to stay here and got connected actually via social media with Jason Falls. I don't know if your listeners know Jason Falls or not, but I think ranked like number 8, 9 on the Forbes top 50 list of most influential and strategic thinkers in social media. He was here. I reached out and said, hey, let's go grab a beer. I'm going to talk. I want to stay in mobile. You know, who do you know? And he said, hey, there's this guy here named Jonathan Irwin, who's the CEO and founder of Ready App. He goes, you guys talk. I said, great. So met Jonathan end of January, 1st of February, and I've been with the company ever since. So mobile in many ways is new in the sense of just a few years for me, but really by and large, there's no one who has a, you know, a resume which says they've been in the mobile space, at least the way it exists today, you know, for 10 years. Yes, people have been around doing, you know, SMS, short form mobile marketing and such, you know, selling games and wallpapers and things on mobile, but nothing that we're experiencing today in the mobile space.
Yeah, I remember when we had first made a connection, spoke on the phone, how excited you were over the different projects you've been working on and just how excited you were by the prospects of just your day-to-day job. And that's one of the reasons why I've invited you here to speak with me. And just an aside, Jeff, the president of True Voice Media, and I had the pleasure of going to a Phillies game this summer with Jason Falls. We got to meet some of his family and Grant Falls, and that little kid he's funny. He's very sharp on his baseball, and I very much enjoyed him.
Yeah, well, I mean, Jason's background is in, you know, our baseball and all that, so I mean, it's in his bones, and so you'd expect nothing less, you know, from the next generation of Fall Grant. So yeah, he's a great guy. You know, we're together. I'll see him in coffee shops sometimes. But just what I like so much about Jason, and what's made and learned a lot from him and others, is that learning how to use social media and focusing mostly on the social part and less on the media.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that many who get on early, and I will admit, you know, I haven't been on Twitter a ton because I was overseas and it came out when we were in Russia, is that want to get on social and start selling first and start pushing first and come by, come do this, come connect with me, come follow me. And people get caught up in how many followers you have or fans, could care less. It doesn't matter at all to me. It really doesn't. I care more about engagement. I care more about, you know, having a tribe of 100, 200, 300 people on Twitter. We care a ton about mobile, and this is why we created Mobile Chat, to gather people together, both mobile marketers, thinkers, strategists, mobile developers themselves, who actually get down in the weeds and live in Objective C and they're in Xcode and they're trying to hack out the next new billion-dollar app. You know, those are the people that I want to engage and talk with. And this is why we're involved in, you know, other chats during the week. Because one is I love to talk, as you're probably figuring out by now. And two, I don't love technology and I don't love computers. I love what they allow me to do.
Exactly.
I love that they allow me to connect with you on a Skype call. You're in Philly. Or last night was on another chat and connecting with people in India and in London and North Carolina and places across the globe. I mean, it is an amazing time to be an entrepreneur, to have ideas and want to network and connect with people. And to do so pretty much for free, i.e. not having a lot of hard costs. You know, those kind of opportunities didn't exist 5-10 years ago. People were just trying to, you know, fiddle around with AOL chats and whatever else. So an amazing time, really, man, to be alive and the opportunities that have been afforded to, you know, guys like me to be able to come and kind of recreate themselves, who don't have a deep tradition history and, you know, have a marketing degree from a major college or whatever else. I just love to talk and connect and chat. You know, even last night, you can go back to my Twitter stream and find all this stuff. You know, my basic rules of Twitter and tweet chats are this: laugh, learn, network, rinse and repeat. Do that every day.
I like that. I like that. So let's talk about selling on mobile. I know that you just kind of touched on you don't want to jump into the sale, and that's I totally agree with that. And that, I think, applies in every realm of sales. But what's the difference between someone buying on a tablet and then buying on a smartphone? Because just me personally, I know that I purchased a couple different things via my iPad, but I don't think I've done the same thing on my smartphone. What do you think is going to take people, what's it going to take for people to go ahead and start purchasing via their smartphones?
You know, good question. I think maybe by and large, the reason why people are more comfortable buying on, say, a larger tablet size is because there's more real estate and they see more. The smartphone, for it to really take off, I mean, I have, you know, the native Starbucks app, so I can walk into the store, open my app, and pay at the point of sale system. I think it's going to take that where the phone in many ways becomes your wallet, purely your wallet, which has your credentials of who you are. It's connected to whatever banking institution you have, so I can walk into the place and pay that. I don't really see that happening really quickly this year. I know Google Wallet's out there. There are other people who are, you know, dabbling. They're hoping that the next, you know, iPhone release has an NFC chip in it. At least that's kind of what the scuttlebutt is. Will it or will it not? But it's one thing to put, you know, the chip technology in your mobile device, in your smartphone, based on the size of it. It's another thing to be able to go into an establishment and make that kind of payment. It's going to take time for point of sale systems, whether they're in retail, especially like, you know, physical brick and mortar places, to have the kind of technology in place to allow that, and to allow, you know, the merchants the ability to do that. Now, interestingly enough, Square and others who are out there putting a dongle inside of a mobile device are a lot faster. They're basically kind of bridging the gap between a society and the behavior we've all had, which is to put, you know, have three or four credit cards in your wallet. But people still want to be able to make payments when they are mobile. Not mobile as a device, but just they're out and about in the daily activities. And so I think we'll see more adoption there as far as mobile payments, whether it's a PayPal dongle or Square, whoever else is going to, you know, be in the space for the next 12 to 18 months until we can get merchants having the technology they need in order to process payments, you know, from a mobile device.
Yeah, and I think that Square is going to be, it's already the biggest player in the mobile payment space, certainly having the credentials of a guy like Jack Dorsey and the clout that he carries around. You know, the NFC is very interesting. And for those that aren't aware of what NFC is, it's near field communications. And it's going to be something where I think Samsung's already doing a very good job with their tech tiles and the way that they're placing them in different spots. Whether that's going to be something that's going to catch on, as well as maybe even QR codes, I'm not sure about that. However, I think that certainly NFC and radio frequency chips are going to be replacing QR codes in the near future. Talk a little bit about getting kind of in the Samsung Apple space a little bit. We're speaking in the wake of the jury decision that came out over the weekend. And how do you see where the mobile space stands now as far as the hardware goes? Apple versus Samsung, Apple winning this huge victory over Samsung, wiping out some of the different products that Samsung was able to sell. Samsung's still going to be able to have and carry the Galaxy S3, which is their flagship phone. But how do you see that going forward? How badly is Samsung hit?
Yeah, it's always fun to do, you know, predictive analysis, you know, here after, you know, this is a fight that just started. There will be appeals and back and forth. Interestingly enough, so Robert Scoble at Scobalizer on Twitter and on Google Plus as well had a pretty interesting post, and his thought was, actually, Samsung came off pretty cheaply. If for only $1 billion, it's going to cost them to be the number two mobile hardware provider, software provider in the world.
Yeah, only.
Yeah. So the only issue and caveat to that is the only reason that Samsung could have severely lost in this is if the court does not allow them to sell those devices that were infringement of innovation. You know, I had some friends who kind of commented, there were various posts that were out about pros and cons, which is good for the U.S. consumer. I know Samsung had mentioned about that, how it was, you know, really going to hurt the future of mobile. There may be some more to that, but what me as an innovator and a person who likes to create, I do like the fact that there was, you know, the ability to protect what we go and innovate and create. Something different than an artist who makes music and songs that doesn't want their stuff pirated or stolen. Same for an artist who creates something. So there's something to be said about, you know, creativity and innovation. And I applaud Apple for what they do. I mean, there's a reason in which I use their particular products because I just want my technology to work. So if my MacBook Pro or my iPhone go down, it's not about that I lose connection. I lose the networking ability with people. And so I want my tech to work. That's why I particularly use them, because they think a ton about that. They think about UI, the user interface, the UX, the user experience, the way in which we use technology. And it's they rewarded, I know, you know, for their innovations. So we'll see. I'm not sure we'll see much difference in the next 6 months with Apple, Samsung, unless something happens in the next, you know, few weeks and the court makes major rulings. But I do think it will be interesting to see what's going to happen with Apple, Google in that particular relationship based on Motorola.
Yeah, lots spinning around today on the internet about the battle between Google and Apple, of course. You know, there's a lot of teenagers, and I'm the oldest of five, so I see everybody else younger than I am, especially my sister, who's a senior in high school, and she's forever on her phone, perhaps more so than I am. But in the same sense, I learned social networking via my phone. How are companies going to be able to combat and cope with this going forward with their new consumers and their new this new generation of buyers? Everybody's so adapt to mobile.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'll look at it from the perspective of a person who is a mobile consumer and a mobile employee. And in many ways, their labels are the new millennial generation or Gen Y or however you stick it in place. But they are accustomed and used to connecting and asking their friends about products. They're not as apt to look at the reviews that are on sites. They'll ask their friends via networks. And the difference is they have learned to communicate differently than, you know, generations that cut their teeth on digital communication via email. So I think the ways in which they can adapt, I know, like from a consumer perspective, a few weeks ago we had as a guest Chuck Martin, author of the book called The Third Screen, as a guest, did some Q&A with him on mobile chat. And, you know, it's called showrooming. You go into a particular establishment, retail, and you can do price checking live there and find that it's $5 cheaper someplace else or $3 cheaper, you know, 5 miles down the road, and then get in your car and drive away. So the merchant there loses and the other merchant wins. You know, Chuck had some pretty different things to say about that, but one is, instead of fighting it and being so, you know, against it, learn how to embrace that and find ways in which to give a different experience besides just simply selling at cost. If any of your you know, listeners to this want to go find that, and we could provide that to them, or they could just simply go to Google, key in hashtag mobile chat, and I can get a blog post after we're finished. You can see the transcript of Q&A with Chuck Martin on that. The second issue, and this is, you know, gets to the bigger philosophical problem that Ready App is trying to solve, is with the mobile employee. So it depends on what stat you look at, but the average 12 to 20 year old will see anywhere between 3,000 to 5,000, sometimes 7,000 text messages a month. And it's not about the text message. It's about the fact they've learned to communicate quickly, especially in short form. Not used to how many people use email, which is like just a digital version of a letter. And there's a reason they learned to use so many short form characters, because they've been limited based on those, the forms based on carriers. So those same people, those same who have been middle school students, high school students, college students, have learned to communicate and talk with each other this way. Now they're graduating and they're moving into, you know, full-time employment. and it causes serious issues from those who want to continue to check Facebook and Twitter and other social sites while they're at work. And so businesses have to decide, do we allow our employees to do that? Do we allow our employees to get on these sites during working hours? Second question is, well, it also can be quite advantageous for business, i.e. networking, making connections, using professional sites like LinkedIn and others to do business. So I have some friends even here who are in sales, and their business does not allow them to be on social networks at all, period. It's a choice they make. There are there advantages and disadvantages to that. But also in relationship to communication and how they're coming into particular businesses, what we're trying to, the big problem behind ReadyApp is not mobile. It's not about even, you know, secure private messaging, which is important for enterprises, whether it's education or not. It's about giving a communication platform to an enterprise who has tens, hundreds of thousands of employees and allow them to communicate the same way that they're already accustomed to. So not having them come in used to using short form of content and then giving them an email address expecting long form communication. So two sides about the way in which mobile has is really revolutionized, both from the consumer side and from an employee.
How is ReadyApp in the whole? How is it trying to solve business issues?
Sorry, buddy, I missed that. You cut out just for a second. I heard the how is, and then
that's all right. We can that's fine. We can edit that part. How is ReadyApp being able to address and solve some of the business issues that social media and social business presents via mobile?
It's a great question. Thanks for, you know, giving me the opportunity to, you know, to talk about what we've been working on and innovating, creating, and, you know, being up till 2 and 3 in the morning with developers on, you know, for months. Sites like Facebook and Twitter are about social, which is true. I often say this, that the internet is not social. People are. And they want to engage. They want to interact back and forth. The problem with, from, say, an enterprise level, or even for education itself, we have an education client and have an application for ReadyApp, is the security and privacy in the ways in which the business entity or the education or even in healthcare communicates privately, securely with both their employees and potential customers. So for example, love Twitter, live on it, network, chat. I love the at reply. I really appreciate what it allows me to do. But if I do, the only way to do private stuff on Twitter is through direct message. And you can do direct message one-to-one, which is great. Not so great if I need to send a private message to 5 people, 20 people, 50 people, 500 people at one time. Now, there are other applications that are out there that do, you know, somewhat similar group messaging functionality, but in many ways they're limited to the number that can be in that group. Second, they access a user's email address and mobile phone, which, you know, gets to the issue of privacy. But we care more about scale. So I've told you the way in which ReadyApp is wanting to innovate is that what we're doing is taking in some way the reverse of Twitter and giving it scalability to give privacy and security back to the enterprise to communicate with their mobile employees. In doing it in a way which was like internal social media. So we took the best of SMS, short form, quick communication, actionable type messages, and paired it with why enterprises love email forever, which is security, privacy, and they can have controls of turning it on and off, and putting those together in one application. So that would be a scenario in which we're trying to help. We have a client right now in the hospitality space. So think of a restaurant which has potentially 50 or 100 employees inside that location. That could be servers, cooks, cleaners, lots of different ways that they're there. The issue that often happens is 2 or 3 employees, servers, let's say, are sick and call and they can't show up for work. How does that person who, you know, owns and runs that store, how do they message right now potentially 50 or 60 people in the server pool to let them know we need to fill 2 spots in the next 4 hours? Right now, most simply can't, or they use SMS and have to do it one-to-one, or they get on the phone and start calling until they find someone, which is incredibly inefficient for, you know, the owner of a restaurant who's trying to, you know, has 6,000 other things to do. So what we're wanting to accomplish with Ready App is that we allow then that owner to send a message to 50, 60 people at one time. They all receive that message directly from that person. And here's what we really wanted to create differently from other group messaging apps. If any of those 50 or 60 people reply, it is now a one-to-one communication channel with that restaurant owner. It's no one else is seeing the big group text, because if you're like me, you've been in these group things on your own personal device, and you might know two or three people in your contacts and you see their name, but then there are eight other names you have no idea who they are, and it's just a number. Even though I love communication and I love digital, it doesn't mean I want everybody seeing, you know, my you know, key credentials, which are email and mobile. Another thing we're trying to help in education is, you know, with a professor, and you know, part of this idea happened, I was stuck in traffic in Louisville going to a meeting, and we were, you know, thinking with this client, and I thought, I'm a professor at a university, and I need to send a message right now to my 50 students, which is, look, I'm sorry, I'm stuck in traffic. Don't leave. I'll be there 15 minutes late. You know, how does she do that? How does that professor do that? Well, right now, it doesn't happen, and the students leave, or she calls the secretary, and he or she writes a note, goes to the class, and posts it. Well, there should be a way, securely and privately, that professor can have access to his all of his students in the various classes and message them, hey, I'm running late. Or maybe it's, hey, be sure that you're prepared for the quiz tomorrow. And here's a great link to an article that will help you prepare for that discussion tomorrow. Do that, you know, privately and securely, but doesn't use email, which is a channel that many students have, but they don't use effectively. And doesn't use the typical intranets and portals that are provided to students, which are great, ton of information there, but typically students don't go live there either, because the students are mobile first. Not about device, it's more about their behavior. They're moving around all day long, and finding a way in which to communicate to them wherever they're at, that's the kind of big idea problem we're trying to solve.
I think that's great. I think that there's actually, you kind of touched on it too, the big business aspect of it. For example, my mother called me up the other day and she said, listen, I need you to come over and take care of this thing with the dryer. Dryer's messed up. So I went over to the house, stayed there for a little while. Guy came over. He was a little bit late. He was not even there for 5 minutes. So already my day is disrupted by doing that. His day has been disrupted because he couldn't fix it. And what it ended up being was a computer issue within the dryer. So I started thinking, what's the better way to kind of address this issue? What if you were to ask your customer, if you're the server, if you're the service provider, you ask the customer that is having the issue to perhaps take a picture or a video of what's happening, if it's actually something that's in the display, which there was in this case. You're able to then send them the video. They're able to assess it right there. They can listen, they can view everything, and then they can make a decision from there. They can have contact with you again, tell you this is what the issue was, this is how we're going to address it. We're only going to have one service call, so you can only, you're only disrupted once instead of twice in our case. And customer's happy, service provider's happy because they've saved money. That, I think, is a great way for a social business to kind of look at it from a service provider's perspective.
Exactly. I mean, even from, and this is funny, so my wife and I are both, you know, heavy mobile users, of course, and, you know, she'll be somewhere, she'll say, hey, I need to get a battery for this, you know, device in the house. And so I don't text her back. I go take a picture of, here's the battery, it's dead. And then I just send her a message with the image, and she gets what we need.
Exactly.
Interesting, because, you know, the way in which my close relationships, I text a ton with really key people in my life, but I'm still communicating. Even so, it's interesting at times when we go in and, you know, we're the snot-nosed punk startup, you know, people in town, and we go talk to, you know, potentially people who, you know, might be older than we are. And, well, you know, we have email. We have, you know, our, you know, communication devices already. And our, my response is always, I tell the story about how many short-form communication messages people take. And typically, they may or may not like that. By and large, It's like, yeah, it's like a waste of time. Well, my response is that may be true. However, it's the way in which they have learned to communicate. Their operating system in their brain has learned to talk with their thumbs.
Yeah.
Not with their big, massive keyboard. So if you want to be happy, successful, and allow your employees to have the same kind of experience they've been used to, then find ways in which you can do that and provide the tools necessary for them to be successful in business.
Your company's Twitter chat, mobile chat. I'm curious as to what seems to be when you're conversing with people on Twitter. What seems to be one of their biggest questions about the things that are happening in the mobile space?
Yeah. It's interesting. What I like right now is I have people who are mobile marketers. They're out, they have marketing services, and so they're trying to find the next big thing or to find ways in which to provide value service back to people who are there. I have developers who are listening in to mobile chat. It's fun. So this is being recorded on Tuesday, right before we do mobile chat, Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And our guest tomorrow is Dan Burkow, a pure mobile guy who gets in the weeds, CEO, founder of a company called Double Encore. So he's going to come on and talk about how you develop an app and, what is the cost to develop an app, because there are people who come on who are in business and thinking about, the world's going mobile, I got it. Instagram got bought for, valuation of $1 billion 3 months ago. I get it, mobile's a big deal. Well, I'm a small, medium-sized business. Do I need to have an app? Do I need to have a native app? Do I need to have a web app? So these are the questions they're asking. They understand the big deal, but they simply sometimes don't know how to, find ways and people to help them. And so that's what I'm seeing most of the question is helping them make those connections. And it's just a ton of fun for me. One of the main reasons we started mobile chat was I was in these chats and making connections and networking and having a ton of fun. And we were the brand at Ready Up was a guest on Media Chat with Aaron Kildy out of Phoenix a few months ago. And I thought, well, this is fun, but there's got to be a tribe of people on Twitter who love mobile. So there's a Google Doc you can actually search and go look at. There's like 600 some in tweet chats. It's crazy, right?
It's incredible, isn't it?
Well, because people are social, they talk about stuff they love. And I went and searched, and there was not a mobile chat. I said, really? How is there not a mobile chat? So I was like, all right, let's just start one. And so that's what we do. We do Q&A each week, and it came down to this. Because I've been to a ton of conferences, in-person conferences, and heard speakers talk. And interestingly enough, I remember almost nothing of what the communicator said when they communicated one way, i.e. to the audience. But I always remember when they stop and do Q&A and let people from the audience ask questions that make sense to them, or, hey, I've got this issue, what do you think? And when I get that person on stage to think on the fly, I almost always remember those questions because they're helpful and see what they've said. And so that's the big idea behind mobile chat, is to find a couple of people who care about this, who have tons of questions, and bring experts on way smarter than I ever will be in the space, whether they're strategists or developers and whatever else, and just, pepper them with questions. One of the tweets I sent out, I think yesterday, was, hey, do you want a 1-hour free consultation with a legit mobile dev guy? Well, here's the CEO of a company, and you get to come on this chat and come, ask him any question you want. So that's what I'm hoping to do in mobile chat, is just to lead and help those who have a ton of questions about mobile, because it's not going away. I often say this, and I believe this completely, that there's conversations about, is your technology disruptive, and, what's it going to do, and, what is it trying to uproot existing? See, mobile's different. Mobile is more than disruptive. It is revolutionary. It's revolutionary in the way that Gutenberg, when he invented the printing press, changed everything. It just did, in the way in which people receive information. The same is true of the digital media in the century. And that goes all the way back to TV, radio, everything, the way in which we communicated and formed connections with people. But mobile will be revolutionary, because now people are carrying around a PC computing power with them all the time. They are always on.
Yep. Couldn't.
Love it.
Couldn't agree more. And we're living in a very exciting and fast-paced time. So, Patrick, where can people find you on the web?
The best place to find me is on Twitter. And you can search for my name, Patrick Goodman, or my handle is @marketingmusic. And it's funny you ask, and thanks for that. I was filling out a form online. It was on a tweet chat, and there was a new company had a product on there. And their sign-up form on the web, it had, you know, first name, last name, email, and it said phone. I don't put my phone number. My phone is @marketingmusic. You want to get a hold of me? That's the best place to get a hold of me and talk to me.
Absolutely. Well, Patrick, it has been an absolute pleasure. This was a really fun interview. Thank you very much for joining me on Social Echoes. And we look forward to all the things that you do with Mobile Chat, Ready App, and wish you all the success in the world.
Thanks, bro. A ton of fun. Really appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you very much for everybody listening. We'll see you next week on the next episode, episode 3 of Social Echoes. Until then, have a great day.